All right, good day wherever you are in this world. I hope you're having a great day here listening to Revolution Radio. Everybody asks for this. Revolution Radio. Where the information never sleeps.
That keeps me alive, let me tell you right now, is number one, I'm right. Number two, I'm willing to die for what I believe in, which means a lot of them are going to die if they come up here and try to kill me or arrest me, because I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number three is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
Well, we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
We shall fight in France. We shall fight on the seas and oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air.
On infiltration instead of invasion. On subversion instead of elections. On intimidation instead of free choice. On guerrillas by night instead of army by day.
We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific and political operations.
In God's good time, the new world, with all its power and might, steps forth to the rescue and the liberation of the old.
Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, no secret is revealed.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists.
Either you are with us, or you are with the terrorists. Freedom and fear are at war.
We have before us the opportunity to forge, for ourselves and for future generations, a new world order. A new world order. When we are successful, and we will be, we have a real chance at this new world order.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the unequivocal truth, DEFCON 1, with me, your host, John Wick. There have been many words that have gone down in history that have a complete new meaning today, as these broadcasts will have an entirely new meaning in the future.
But we got a good military and we can take down governments. And he said, I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail. So I came back to see him a few weeks later. And by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, are we still going to war with Iraq? And he said, oh, it's worse than that. He said, he reached over on his desk. He picked up a piece of paper. He said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense office today. And he said, this is a memo that describes how we're going to take out seven countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran.
Yes, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. That would have been Wesley Clark. And, you know, tonight's broadcast is going to almost, it should shake you a little bit. and make you understand and realize that all this money that has been funded and pumped up into these deep, dark projects that the government runs is well on its way to bringing us into a full-fledged World War III. You know, I've put this broadcast together over about a period of maybe about 2 weeks. And it all started with me following three specific space rocks. We'll get to it in due time. But I want to tie all of this together so I paint a very good picture for you to see where we stand and what could be something we all will face in the not-too-distant future. And, you know, I have come across all kinds of information, not only in regards to what took place there in Beirut, Lebanon, and we're going to talk about that, but other things that took place a day before, the day of, and, you know, consequently, you know, the day after was the commemoration of the bombing of Hiroshima with Little Boy. And I see what took place in September 11th, 2001. And I see where we are headed, and that is into a full-fledged global war. You know, I firmly believe World War III started in 2001 on September 11th. When two low-grade or low-yield nukes brought down the Twin Towers. And then Building 7 being brought down under guise of demolition. We're going to pull it, right? Remember that? Well, I find it timely to look at what General Wesley Clark had said, and that's why I played it at the very beginning of the broadcast, because if every problem you have, if the only tool you have is a hammer, well, then every problem has got to look like a nail, right? Well, there's all kinds of hammers, don't you find? All the way from Castle Bravo to Zarbamba, and as of the other day, on the 5th, 8/5/2020, the same day that this incident took place in Lebanon, transpired. China tests carrier killer ballistic missile as U.S. fires off Minuteman III ICBM. Yeah, you haven't heard of this, have you? They're not pumping this through the Western media, are they? Well, the United States and the People's Republic of China have both recently test-fired long-range ballistic missiles, although the U.S. has nearly 20 times the number of nuclear weapons as China. The Trump administration has insisted Beijing be included in any new arms control treaties. On Monday, the People's Liberation Army Rocket Force, or also known as the PLARF, announced it had test-fired two ballistic missiles during a recent drill. One was a short-range Dongfeng 16 missile, and the other was a Dongfeng 26, an intermediate-range ballistic missile, or also known as an IRBM, designed to strike targets thousands of miles away. It says here, quote, "We are in a highly alert state for combat. To ensure our actions are prompt and precise," Liu Yang, the commander of the brigade that carried out the tests, was quoted as saying in a story on PLA news site 81.cn. It's got images of these things being fired. It says here, a Rode Mobile DF-26 intermediate long-range ballistic missile is test-fired by China's People's Liberation Army Rocket Force. The Dongfeng 26 has a range of some 2,500 miles and has been touted as a carrier killer, capable of endangering U.S. battle fleets in the region. It has the range to strike U.S. installations on Guam from the Chinese coast. According to the report, the drill was to test how quickly PLARF soldiers could respond to an incoming nuclear attack. In the video, they are seen donning protective gear as they rush to their mobile missile launchers, then driving them to a platform on a plane that appears to be prepared for launching missiles. The report did not say when the drill occurred. But in due time, meanwhile, just after midnight on August 4th, the U.S. Air Force's Global Strike Command fired off an unarmed LGM-30 Minuteman III intercontinental ballistic missile, also known as an ICBM, equipped with three re-entry vehicles. In a real nuclear strike, each would carry its own nuclear warhead and go on to strike a separate target. The missile flew some 4,200 miles from Vandenberg Air Force Base on the California coast to Kwajalein Atoll in the Marshall Islands, U.S. Strategic Command said in a news release. The Minuteman III is 50 years old, and continued test launchers or launches are essential in ensuring its reliability until the 2030s, when the ground-based strategic deterrent is fully in place. Interesting. That ties some things together for me of what I was just researching. And like I said, folks, I mean, I'm serious. When I do some of these broadcasts and I go to put them together, these things just fall together in such a way. It's like it's about like Tetris. It really is. And we'll get to this here. So ensuring its reliability until the 2030s, keep this in mind, when the ground-based strategic deterrent is fully in place. Most importantly, this visible message of national security serves to assure our allies and dissuade potential aggressors. The 576th Flight Test Squadron Commander Colonel Omar Colbert said in the release. A U.S. Navy E-6 Mercury Doomsday plane, airborne command post, and communications aircraft also used the drill to test its own ability to take charge of an ICBM in the event that ground command is interrupted during the missile's flight. In just 6 months, on February 5, 2021, the new Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty, or New START, between the U.S. and Russia will expire, and the rush is on to either extend or replace it. The United States has some 5,800 nuclear weapons, roughly 20 times China's arsenal. But New START limits the U.S. to just 1,550 deployed at any one time. Russia's arsenal is slightly larger at 6,800 weapons, but is subject to the same limitations. China, meanwhile, has just 300 nuclear warheads. Despite this, the U.S. has insisted that China be involved in any new arms control treaty. Now, let's get something straight here real quick, okay? They don't know how many nuclear warheads each country has. I mean, come on, are you serious? They can't even keep track of some of the nuclear material that went missing through the black market, right? They have no clue whatsoever. And how long has this arms race been going on? Oh, that's right, since 1945 or earlier. I mean, if you want to look into Germany and you know, their heavy water manufacturing and the stuff that they were involved with, and then obviously as well as you know, we got to mention Wernher von Braun as well, right? Especially with the route we're going down tonight. But on July 5th, Fu Kong, the head of the Arms Control Department of the Chinese Foreign Ministry, said Beijing would be happy to join the U.S. and Russia in such talks, provided the U.S. reduces its own arsenal to the size of China's, which Beijing says serves no purpose except deterrence. The U.S. State Department seemed to accept the prospect of talks, but not of arms reduction, suggesting the Chinese begin talks with their Russian counterparts first. However, Chinese ambassador to Russia, Zhang Hanghui, blasted the U.S. response in comments on July 30th, saying the U.S. has repeatedly made proposals on arms control for China, Russia, and the U.S. and promoted the China factor to distract international attention. Pursuing to justify its withdrawal from the U.S.-Russian New Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty and pursuing self-liberation and achievement of absolute strategic advantage. China and Russia see this very clearly. China's refusal to participate in trilateral arms control negotiations does not mean that China refuses to participate in international nuclear disarmament efforts, Zhang continued. Several days earlier, U.S. President Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin reaffirmed at least the principle of a bilateral arms treaty between them due to their special responsibility for maintaining international peace and security as the world's largest nuclear powers, according to a Kremlin press release. The U.S. has withdrawn from several key treaties designed to reduce war tensions, including the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces, INF treaty, that banned missiles with ranges between 500 and 5,500 kilometers, and more recently, the Treaty on Open Skies, which provided for flyover inspections of each member's territory in the spirit of openness. Many fear New START may be the next treaty shed as the U.S. prepares for interstate strategic competition with Russia and China, as Pentagon strategy statements indicate. All meanwhile, folks, I want to assure you that while all this is going on, suborbit, there is a weapons race going on right now. And this weapons race is of astronomic, pun intended, proportions. SpaceX continues to blast satellites into orbit as the space community worries. The company has made changes, but some wonder if there's more work to do. Early in 2020, SpaceX became the operator of the world's largest active satellite constellation, with 180 satellites orbiting the planet. The milestone is a mere starting point for Starlink, SpaceX's ambitious project to provide internet capabilities. Yeah, sure. This is the guys, okay? You need to understand this. That this isn't just for providing internet capabilities to every inch on the globe. That's bullshit, okay? You want to know how and why I can tell you this? It's because DARPA and the secret projects agencies have purchased SpaceX. Elon Musk is just the front man. And the stuff that they're pumping up there into space, you know, don't get me wrong, some of it very well could be going to Mars to start building, you know, robotic 3D printers, start building structures to make it habitable. But one of the things that I'm almost beyond absolutely certain that is being put up there as well are exotic weapons platforms. And folks, that's what tonight's broadcast is going to get into tonight. And a few other things as well. But yes, to get that kind of connectivity, the company wants the option to launch up to 42,000 satellites over the next decade. That's about 21 times the number of operational satellites currently in space. And the true impact of the company's nascent mega constellation is still very much a mystery. Well, I'm going to crack a little bit of that mystery tonight for you. I don't know if I want to continue on with this article because it's just going to continue to feed us a bunch of, half-truths and stuff that they don't, are completely covering up. So we're going to continue on, but that's why I said I want to save that. So 42,000 objects to be released in the low orbit of space. Well, this explosion that took place in Lebanon, beyond any reason of any doubt, to my own observation and research, has proven to me that I have been absolutely right with several things that have happened in the past and have just occurred, you know, just this past Monday. And I want to read something here because I want to show you the misdirection, how the agencies or the news agencies, and you best damn well believe it, a lot of them are wrapped up in the internal intelligence agencies, to give full deniability of such weapons platforms existing. So just roll with me with this. This is not, most definitely, not my point of view on this, but I just have to bring this to you to show you the deception that is put forth, and then give you some solid, hardcore, factual information. The China Tianjin explosion was caused by a Pentagon Rod of God space weapon strike, according to conspiracy theorists. Mm-hmm. Well, a bizarre conspiracy theory touted as a bombshell is currently being circulated in the conspiracy theory blogosphere. According to conspiracy theorists, the U.S. was behind the deadly twin blast that devastated a large area of one of China's major ports in Tianjin, killing more than 100 people. Now, I want you to understand the situation that took place in Tianjin and the situation that took place in Beirut, Lebanon, are absolutely almost identical. Not only in scope of size of damage, but to the effect of people affected, hurt, killed, maimed, injured, so on and so forth. But let's get back into this. The Pentagon, according to the Unhived Mind and Michael Allen Adams, Natural News, caused the explosion with a weapon launched from space, but tried to disguise it as an accident. Natural News cites a 2004 article by Popular Science describing the operation of a hypothetical space-based weapons system dubbed Rods from God. To support its conspiracy theory speculation that the Chinese were hit by a space-based weapon fired by Pentagon. I should say by the Pentagon. So this is probably one of them AI-written articles. But Popular Science makes it clear that the technology for the hypothetical kinetic energy space weapon it described was very far out in miles and years. But according to conspiracy theorists, the latest incident is evidence that China and U.S. are already at war over recent disputes. Well, this just doesn't read like somebody wrote this, does it? It's probably because I'm right. Somebody didn't write this. It was an AI bot. Pentagon launched the attacks, let's just read this outright as it says, okay? Pentagon launched the attack as a kinetic retaliation against China for devaluating the yuan because Washington construes the move as intended to collapse the U.S. economy. Mm-hmm. Natural News claims that its sources said the Pentagon launched the attack specifically to forestall the Chinese government's planned announcement of a gold-backed currency and fire sale of its U.S. debt holding. According to the alleged sources, such action by the Chinese could trigger total collapse of the U.S. economy and crash the dollar. Thus, the kinetic energy weapon attack was meant to warn Beijing to reconsider the move. Recalling that the action comes soon after the U.S. warned China about its agents seeking dissidents within its borders and threats of retaliation from Washington following alleged Chinese cyber attacks targeted at U.S. systems, conspiracy theorists speculated that other related factors might have contributed to the desperate action by Washington. Natural News cites a 2011 report by The Telegraph, which quotes a U.S. strategy statement that Washington will consider using conventional weaponry in response to a cyber attack on the United States. The alleged space-based Rod of God weapon allows the U.S. military to take out any land-based target from high orbit. The website Unhived Mind claims in that crater resulting from the Tianjin explosion suggests that it could have been caused by subsurface bursts of a 5-kiloton nuclear weapon. Incredibly, Unhived Minds is claiming that the U.S. might have hit China with a nuclear weapon in retaliation against a decision by the Chinese to devalue their own currency. Well, when this explosion did take place in Tianjin, China in 2015, I did watch some of the aftermath footage, and there were people walking around with biohazard suits on carrying Geiger counters. I did see that with my own two eyes. But it says here, that's eerily similar to the message sent by the United States in the dropping of the world's first atomic bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Yes, the USA is willing to drop weapons of mass destruction on civilian populations. It has already done it twice. National News claims that it obtained information from mainland Chinese dissident sources that the country's authorities were investigating the incident but have implemented aggressive tactics to guard information they have obtained about the cause of the explosion. The alleged sources asserted that the official explanation of the incident by the Chinese authorities was deliberate fabrication to allow the government to dissimulate while conducting further investigation into the cause of the explosion. As part of efforts to impose a news black on the incident, you know, this is just ridiculous. I can't even read this. Well, I mean, we're getting to the end of it, so persevere, right? Trudge on. As part of the efforts to impose a news black on the incident, the Chinese government cordoned off the area and banned reporters from accessing the site. The government also commenced a crackdown on bloggers it accused of promoting conspiracy theories about the incident. China has blacked out reporting on Tianjin in exactly the same way the U.S. media blacked out reporting on Dr. William Thompson, the CDC whistleblower who admitted the CDC buried evidence linking vaccines to autism. You know, a whole other can of worms, right? Meanwhile, conspiracy theorists, you know, how many? So the one thing I wanted to do mainly was by reading this, I wanted you to understand how many times the damn thing mentions conspiracy theorists to try and dissuade from something I'm going to prove to you tonight is very damned factual. So yes, meanwhile, conspiracy theorists debate the target of the attack. Some, according to the Daily Mail, claim the Pentagon targeted Chinese government supercomputer. Yes, Tianhe-1A, located at the Chinese National Supercomputing Center, close to the scene of the explosion. Well, and coincidentally enough, that brings me into the next thing I had put in line here, because I want to paint a very clear picture for you, okay? And that's why I'm going through all these different things to try and come to a huge point. And I mean, when I say huge point, I mean huge point. So yes, TH1 Sky River number 1 is a supercomputer capable of an RMAX or maximum range of 2.5 petaflops. Located at the National Supercomputing Center of Tianjin, China. It was the fastest computer in the world from October of 2010 to June of 2011, and is one of the few petascale supercomputers in the world. In October of 2010, an upgrade version of the machine, Tianhe-1A, overtook ORNLS's Jaguar to become the world's fastest supercomputer, with a peak computing rate of 2.57 petaflops. In June 2011, the Tianhe-1A was overtaken by the K computer as the world's fastest supercomputer, which was also subsequently superseded. Both the original Tianhe-1 and Tianhe-1A use a Linux-based operating system. On August 12, 2015, the 186,368-core Tianhe-1 felt the impact of the powerful Tianjin explosions and went offline for some time. Now, I want to pause here and interject. See, this last article I just wrote you, there were half-truths within there, okay? And yes, it did send ripples through the stock market. And yes, it also did, like I just mentioned, knock this supercomputer offline. This explosion did. Xinhua reports that the office building of Chinese supercomputer Tianhe-1, one of the world's fastest supercomputers, suffered damage. Sources at Tianhe-1 told Xinhua the computer is not damaged, but they have shut down some of its operations as a precaution. Operation resumed on August 17th, 2015. So, just putting the dots there, okay? We're going to move on here, and this is what I'm getting at, folks, is there are exotic weapons being used right now. They have been used, and they're going to continue to be used. And they're going to be used in such a way to move agendas forward. And when I talk about agendas, I'm not talking about just a little dip in the pond here, okay? I'm talking about a huge splash in the ocean. Literally, almost to a certain extent. And we'll get there in due time, so just continue. Let's roll with this, okay? So the explosion that took place in Beirut, Lebanon, I initially, you know, sat down and started going through as much footage as I could come across about a day later, waiting for more stuff to be released to view. And there have been people that have been posting some videos that show some interesting things, which I do not purport to be the exact truth. I believe that there are people that have been manipulating these videos in such a way to try and turn this into a conspiracy-ridden hellhole. But the thing is, what I'm going to tell you tonight is more than likely exactly what hit the damn place. Not only that place, but Tianjin, China, and I'm likely going to say that it's probably more than likely been used in the Middle East, in Iraq, Afghanistan, and probably other places. But the headline to this, it says, breaking news, breathtaking video may show Israel missile attack on Beirut, according to VT. Original VT caption, case closed, infrared video reveals details of Israeli nuclear missile, and much more. So that's what the headline on this article reads. And the timing here, Thursday, August 6th, 2020, 22:22 hours. Don't you find that interesting in its own right? But what I was getting at is I reviewed the images first, and I didn't see anything. To the naked eye, through our regular spectrum of vision, I started doing a little bit of digging, and I come across two videos that somebody had turned into a thermal view. And this thermal view shows the object striking its target. And the target was this ship and this warehouse. And coincidentally, there was also a Rothschild's bank in the local area that got shuttered as well. I want to read some of this, but I want to try and find which place to start here, because there's so much different information than different links, all kinds of stuff. I'm trying to just get to where I can, you know, the meat and potatoes, as you will. If I can get the internet to work, you know, this is becoming a weekly occurrence. And believe it or not, I completely reset the routers, the hardware, and everything before the broadcast. And it's saying that it cannot process the page. You can't make it up. You really just can't make this up. Everything was running real smooth here just shortly, a while ago. So let me reset the system, as I have to, you know, generally do now every weekend. I can't believe this. You know, I want you to understand that that the Western media, obviously, you know, they're bought and paid for. They're prostitute, lying mouthpieces, okay? Ministry of Smoke and Mirrors. I've brought you more information over the past, 40 minutes than what anything you're going to hear in the mainstream media all day, because it's just a big rerun and a rewrite and a reread of the teleprompter. But the thing is the interference and the interruptions that have been happening and occurring are just monumental, astronomical, right? Not only the shadow banning and the outright banning of people from platforms and, hell, even the president. You know, they don't want information to get out. Why? Because, well, it doesn't benefit them for the populace to be aware of what they are doing. But I'm making it my life goal to out corruption and, you know, maybe, possibly, hopefully, it'd be nice, change the world for a better place. But as we throw out speed bumps to them, they throw out speed bumps to us, right? So I guess we can just say touche. And we got things fired up here. See if this clears it up and we can go through some of this now. So they've got some satellite images here of this port.
Not Iran.
Where the hell did that come from? Iraq, not Iran. Okay. I seriously do not know where that came from. I do not. It just started blaring out over this here, and there are no videos playing whatsoever. So we just had Bush chime in and say Iraq over Iran. Or maybe it might have been that clip from Wesley Clark a while ago, might have chimed back in. Well, regardless. So there's two pictures here, images, and obviously this is a terrestrial broadcast, so you can't see them, but it shows this port where this was literally struck by a weapon, a very sophisticated weapon, mind you. This ammonium nitrate, if this is what they say is stored there, was not what caused this. It's just a really good cover story, mind you. See, my guess is, as you heard Wesley Clark in the beginning of the broadcast say, well, guess what? One country is a target, you know, 7 countries in 5 years. Lebanon was one of them countries. And as of now, since Lebanon has been thrown into utter turmoil and chaos, people are taking to the streets and protesting and marching on government buildings. So this has literally set off a color revolution in Beirut, Lebanon. As we go down through here, it's showing the explosion and, you know, this compressed energy wave, you know, shock wave, if you will. So it says here, it says, I was careful about this article's title from the first post, for I was not able to process the truth of whether the video was manipulated or not. I still do not have any definitive proof either way. I know VT are, you know, which is Veterans Today, are still standing behind their original post. The bin caption was always clear. Breaking news, breaking video may show Israel missile attack on Beirut, according to VT. Which, like I said, is Veterans Today with Gordon Duff. And I'm going to tell you what, Gordon Duff, his work, and Veterans Today are extremely exponential in the alternative media. A very important clog in the alternative media. After processing all the data, I am not sure anything has substantially changed in the analysis apart from the question of whether the video shows the actual weapon used or not. It certainly still shows the effect of the blast. It says this was not a firework attack. Let us be clear. This was a very sophisticated strike and weapon used to attack the port. The attack was not carried out from the back of a truck by a man with box cutter like 9/11. Look at the damage, people. Only a handful of nations have this capability, and there is only one ran by lunatic leadership that would rely on a twisted motif to even dream of such an attack. Rothschild's Israel Corps seems to reserve the right to genocide humanity, and it seems to think no one has the right to protect themselves from their genocidal cult activities. Consider the USS Liberty, 9/11, and the aftermath of PNAC across the Middle East. Rothschild's UN in the same force behind the attempted disarming of Americans. The Bolsheviks prefer to genocide nations that can't defend themselves and that people be disarmed by the fifth column agents. Democrats, predominantly in America, before they caused the planned collapse of a society. All articles on BIN by 1776reloaded.org are designed to try and help people understand that all the events we are witnessing are connected to the black nobility Luciferian cults, age-old attempt to take over the world, to genocide what they consider to be excess population, and to enslave the remaining people under a one-world government. This includes the Beirut attack, 9/11, government ID 1984, etc. Folks, I know this is some heavy stuff, okay? Don't get me wrong. But if we don't look at it for what it is and what's going down and what's happening, then we're not going to be able to defend ourselves from such things. The more we can give these kinds of broadcasts to wake the masses is lane speed bumps. That very well and hopefully does slow down this out-of-control train that is just, you know, doing 180 mile an hour off the tracks. They've got big plans. They're executing them before your very eyes. And by God, this broadcast tonight is going to tell you how they're doing it. So it's got a thing here. It says, America is a golden calf and we will suck it dry, chop it up and sell it off piece by piece until there is nothing left. But the world's biggest welfare state that we will create and control. This is what we do to countries that we hate. We destroy them very slowly. Benjamin Netanyahu, 1990. Not Netanyahu, employed at the time as a Soviet agent in a covert conversation taped in 1990 at Fink's Jerusalem, a well-known Mossad hangout, taken directly from the transcript of the recording, which was, let's see here, this is really fine print, let's zoom in here, which was and or has been 100% fully authenticated, shown here, making the satanic sign of 666 at that meeting. Yep, and there is an image of him sitting there doing the, you know, what they have said is the, that white Marxist symbol, the OK symbol, right? In all reality is 666. You've got the three and then the circle between the index finger and the thumb makes the circle for the six. Yes, old Netanyahu, who wants to bring in the Mashiach, is giving the 666 symbol. U.S. is here. Veterans Today uploaded an article featuring footage of an alleged Israeli missile attack on Beirut. The video has already been pulled from fascist tube and is mirrored here for preservation purposes and to aid all in accessing and processing this important information. The million-dollar question at this time is, did anyone in the Rothschilds, D.C., USARAL Corp. endorse a nuclear strike on Beirut? Says, I do not think Trump did so based on his public comments and demeanor when asked the question of the nuclear missile strike, but Israel first seditionists and traitors in the USARAL Corp, long occupying America, Britain, France, and most governments of the world may well have done so just like they endorsed 9/11, Building 7, Government ID 1984, etc. Is this surprise the reason attack behind Trump now appearing to suggest that he is now going to a lockdown for a while, like I have said and suggested over a past couple of roundtables or the past couple of nights, that he's likely probably going to be within Cheyenne Mountain, if I had to take my guess, either that or Camp David. If he is, beloved, this to be a wise move at this time, America's traitors are everywhere and have long been behind the gates of America's unlawful de facto governments, as I will explain below, it says. There's a video here. Trump date 8/6/2020. Well, let's see if we can just play this, right? Hear it from the president himself. Assuming it isn't very long. There we go. No, come on. I do not want to hear you give your monologue. Okay, well, I guess we're not going to. Here we go.
This may be the last time you'll see me for a while. A lot of very, very rich enemies, but they are not happy with what I'm doing. But I figure we have one chance to do it, and no other president's going to do what I do.
That's very strange. And on top of that, there was a very strange...
Yeah, very strange indeed, right? Well, you know, what is it saying here? So this has got something. Somebody has posted, it says, this is a picture taken today when President Trump was boarding Marine One to travel to Ohio. I thought it was unusual that it appears that staff members were watching him leave. I've never witnessed that before. You know, folks, I'm going to tell you, we're coming up into November, right? Election, less than 90 some days out. These bastards that have controlled this country for a very long time, we've seen them stop at nothing, right? Well, I wouldn't put it past them to blow the White House up with the president in it. You want to, you know, throw a shot, you know, not quite across the bow, but into the starboard deck, that would do it. So I'm pretty sure the president is probably literally underground right now. Or in the process of being underground. You know, he gave a little bit of, it was a weird, kind of a weird press conference yesterday. I don't know where he was at. They had like a floral pattern for the carpet, and they had these, you know, the flag up there and a little podium. And nothing else. All you could see was him and the two flags. So where was that shot at? I have no clue. Could it have been underground? Well, very damn likely. I'm telling you, there's a lot of things up. And this explosion in Lebanon is moving things in such a direction. You know, see, the thing is, the big question is what was it and why? And because obviously, whatever the hell was there, it is not there no longer. It was blown into oblivion. Along with displacing something, I think, of the effect of 300,000 people. You know, literally just demolished their homes, businesses. This is saying here, it says, the meeting of the D.C. Crown, Vatican created de facto United States Incorporated shadow government, which has been occupying America through successor corporations since the 1860s up until Trump. I.e. a foreign de facto government corporation masquerading as a we the people government, one that should not be confused with the original de jure we the people founding fathers rooted federal government created by the organic sovereign states. And in the videos here that it shows, these thermal image videos, the only place you're going to see these images is if you go to Brighteon, that's one site carrying these images or these videos. Or where I had found them, and that is beforeitsnews.com. I know some people are going to scoff and their eyes are rolling in the back of their head and they're, you know, staring into their gray matter. But hey, I'm not saying that, that's about as good as the Onion, right? Hey, at least somebody is putting the images out there, and if they are banning them and censoring them, well then, by God, they don't want somebody to see it, don't you think? This makes a hell of a lot more sense than saying a TR-3B flew over and dropped something. Get out of here. So let's get into the meat and potatoes, shall we? Well, you want to know what it was that hit these two areas, Tianjin and Beirut, Lebanon? Do you really want to know? Can you handle the truth? Well, get this. The Air Force's rods from God could hit with the force of a nuclear weapon with no fallout. The 107-country Outer Space Treaty signed in 1967 prohibits nuclear, biological, or chemical weapons from being placed in or used from Earth's orbit. This is bouncing around here. Hopefully we can get it to steady out. What they didn't count on was the United States Air Force's most simple weapon ever. A tungsten rod that could hit a city with the explosive power of an intercontinental ballistic missile. During the Vietnam War, the U.S. used what it called was a lazy dog bombs. These were simply solid steel pieces less than 2 inches long, fitted with fins. They called them plachettes. There was no explosive. They were simply dropped by the hundreds from planes flying over Vietnam. Lazy dog projectiles, a.k.a. kinetic bombardment, could reach speeds of up to 500 miles per hour as they fell to the ground and could penetrate 9 inches of concrete after being dropped from as little as 3,000 feet. The idea is like shooting bullets at a target, except instead of losing velocity as it travels, the projectile is gaining velocity and energy that will be expanded on impact. They were shotgunning a large swath of jungle, raining bullet-sized death at high speeds. That's how Project Thor came to be. Now, you know, what was that? You know, let's hear Project Thor. All right, I just want to do this because I just find it timely. I really do, okay? So let me get this set up here. Project Thor. Oh, I ran a little bit too farther than what I wanted to here. Hang tight. I was going to have this all set up if I didn't have to reboot and do all this and that and be able to have a seamless broadcast. But somebody somewhere doesn't want me to have a seamless broadcast. But, you know, Project Thor, right? Thor, the Norse god of mythology, had a hammer, didn't he? That's right. Yes, he did.
So I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail.
That's right. Directly from the mouths of babes. General Wesley Clark, right? So if the only tool you have is a hammer, well, then everything that everything else needs to, you know, look like a nail. So that's how Project Thor came to be, you know, raining these bullet-sized projectiles of death through the jungles of Vietnam. Instead of hundreds of small projectiles from a few thousand feet, Thor used a large projectile from a few thousand miles above the earth. The Rods from God idea was a bundle of telephone pole size, 20 foot long, 1 foot in diameter, tungsten rods, dropped from orbit, reaching a speed of up to 10 times the speed of sound. That's Mach 10, folks. The rod itself would penetrate hundreds of feet into the earth, destroying any potential hardened bunkers or secret underground sites. More than that, when the rod hits, the explosion would be on par with the magnitude of a ground-penetrating nuclear weapon, but with no fallout. Such a weapon could destroy a target within 15 minutes' notice. The Quora user, who claims to work in the defense aerospace industry, quoted a cost of no less than $10,000 a pound to fire anything into space. With 20 cubic feet of dense tungsten weighing in at just over 24,000 pounds, the math is easy. Just one of the rods would be prohibitively expensive. The cost of $230 million a rod was unimaginable during the Cold War. These days, not so much. The Bush administration even considered revisiting the idea to hit underground nuclear sites in rogue nations in the years after 9/11. Interestingly enough, the cost of a single Minuteman III ICBM was $7 million in 1962. When it was first introduced, $57 million adjusted for inflation. The trouble with a nuclear payload is that it isn't designed to penetrate deep into the surface. And the fallout from a nuclear device can be devastating to surrounding potentially friendly areas. A core takeaway from the concept of weapons like Project Thor is that hypersonic weapons pack a significant punch and may be the future of global warfare. Copyrighted 2019. The real, or read the original article at We Are the Mighty. So, you know, are you seeing it now? Are you understanding? And do you realize the weapons that they have created? You know, it gets more terrifying than this, because what they plan on doing with these things. And we're going to get to that within this hour of this broadcast, the last hour of the broadcast. But a kinetic bombardment or a kinetic orbital strike is the hypothetical act of attacking a planetary surface with an inert projectile from orbit, where the destructive power comes from the kinetic energy of the projectile impacting at very high speeds. The concept originated during the Cold War. Typical depictions of the tactic are of a satellite containing a magazine of tungsten rods. Now, I watched a video and somebody was saying, these things would just burn up in the atmosphere. Not if they were combined with tungsten and carbon. Okay. Tungsten carbide rods. Okay. Yeah. Let's move up a little bit more, or, you know, maybe titanium rods. Or it could be some completely out of this world object that they have devised. There's some blueprints and some sketches out there that are very extremely interesting, to say the least. But yes, a satellite containing a magazine of tungsten rods and a directional thrust system. In science fiction, you know, and don't we come to find out that science fiction is becoming more science fact as the days, weeks, months, and years roll on? The weapon is often depicted as being launched from a spaceship. Well, there's your TR-3B, instead of a satellite. When a strike is ordered, the launch vehicle breaks one of the rods out of its orbit and into a suborbital trajectory that intersects the target. As the rod approaches periapsis due to gravity, it picks up immense speed until it reaches terminal velocity shortly before impact. The rods would typically be shaped to minimize air resistance and maximize terminal velocity. Kinetic bombardment has the advantage, get this, kinetic bombardment has the advantage of being able to deliver projectiles from a very high angle at a very high speed, making them extremely difficult to defend against. In addition, projectiles would not require explosive warheads, and in the simplest designs, would consist entirely of solid metal rods, giving rise to the common nickname, Rods from God. Disadvantages include the technical difficulties of ensuring accuracy and the high costs of positioning ammunition in orbit. Get out of here. That's bullshit. That is complete and utter ridiculous lie right there. That last little bit is completely asinine. Disadvantages include the technical difficulties of ensuring accuracy and the high costs of positioning ammunition in orbit. Have you not seen all the SpaceX, like I said, they want to put 42,000 platforms up there over the next, 10 years? Well, real life concepts and theories. Okay, yeah, we already talked about the lazy dog bombs during the Korean and Vietnam Wars. The Flechette is actually what it was called. I mentioned that. Project Thor, yes, is the idea of a weapon system that launches telephone pole-sized kinetic projectiles made from tungsten, yes. Now, I want to get into this because, you know, some of this is going to be mentioning some of the same stuff I've already covered. But hey, this is what it is. I want, because I am leading to something. I am getting to something, okay? And what I'm getting to is I had somebody send me a warning or a heads up or a be prepared. Now, I want you to understand that this is the dates have already passed. But mind you, nonetheless, what we say, what we talk about, and if we mention things enough, we can get the word out and literally force their hand in the other direction where they will not move forward with an operation. I had somebody send this to me, and they used to work within the intelligence agencies and still has friends within the intelligence agencies and is also finding other chatter, as well as I am finding chatter myself. But the message reads as such. Intelligence sources are working an issue regarding an impact event that is due this week. The week in question was 8/5/2020 through 8/8/2020. But folks, I want to make you understand that there is absolutely no date set in stone. They pull these operations off at their own leisure. So this has already passed these dates, but do not think that this still cannot happen. On the west coast of CONUS, Pacific waters, Washington, Oregon, and California are in the impact zone. Sources are conflicted if this is a natural celestial event, asteroid, if you will, or if this is a scheduled directed action, an ICBM satellite directed incident by unknown actors / forces. Chatter suggests public explanation as a 200-foot-plus asteroid that will break up in the atmosphere, resulting in multiple impact sites in the hot zone. Chatter also suggests there are mitigation actions underway to intercept and/or nullify the event. This does not guarantee nullification of impacts. And I've found this interesting lately. When I get a few different kinds of messages of good information or of information that I can disseminate, go about, or release, Skype just, interestingly enough, cuts off the very bottom of the memo or the note or the text, if that's what you want to call it. Repercussions and magnitude of, and I cannot read the rest of it, because Skype is such a great tool. So the Pentagon's new superweapon is basically a weaponized meteor strike. In the 1950s, Jerry Pournelle imagined the military equivalent of the extinction of the dinosaurs, toiling away as a Boeing operations researcher in the afterglow of the Manhattan Project of the Soviet Union's first lightning nuclear test in 1949, the U.S. Army veteran envisioned a weapons system armed not with munitions and other chemical explosives, but massive rods forged from heavy metals dropped from suborbital heights. Those tungsten thunderbolts, as the New York Times called them, would impact enemy strongholds below with the devastating velocity of a dino-exterminating impact, obliterating highly fortified targets, like, say, Iranian centrifuges or North Korean bunkers, without the mess of nuclear fallout. Pornell, whose years of experience in aerospace would fuel a career as a journalist and military science fiction writer, named his super weapon Project Thor. Others just called it Rods from God. In reality, weapons researchers refer to it as a kinetic energy projectile, a super dense, super fast projectile that, operating free of complex systems and volatile chemicals, destroys everything in its path. And it's got an image of something here, you know, and I would assume that this is probably up there over our heads right now. Now, paint in your mind's eye, if you will, what would just be a circular canister or maybe a satellite that has these two sheaths or containment capsules over the sides of it. Well, this thing is given the order to launch. The two capsules pop off to the side, revealing this triangular-shaped object of what looks to be made of the material of which you might see a B-2 Spirit stealth bomber. But mind you, that's not the same material that this is made of. But it has the shape of what I would purport to be a fat arrowhead, I guess. Way up there in space. You know, you look at the TR-3B, you know, this triangular craft they speak of. Okay, well, scale that down to about the size of maybe a Volkswagen Beetle. And you have this object. It's not a tungsten rod, this one, but ominous nonetheless looking. A DARPA rendering depicts a supersonic conventional weapon as it emerges from its rocket nose. Not quite Jerry Pornell's Rods from God, but just as terrifying. The idea of kinetic weaponry raining down inert projectiles on an enemy with a deadly velocity is far more a novel concept. For the trebuchet was the backbone of successful sieges for hundreds of years, from ancient China to Hernan Cortez. Subjugation of the Aztecs during and after World War II, airmen have occasionally deployed clusters of inert lazy dog bombs, metal cylinders traveling at terminal velocity on the battlefields of Korea and Vietnam. And gravity hasn't always been necessary. For decades, militaries have used ultra-dense kinetic energy penetrators, also known as KEPs. Specifically designed shells often wrapped in an outer shell, a sabot, as you will, and fired at high velocity rather than dropped from the sky, to defeat defense armor. That's the fundamental logic underpinning the U.S. Navy's highly touted electromagnetic railgun, which can blast a 25-pound hypervelocity projectile with 32 megajoule muzzle energy through 7 steel plates and obliterate whatever the armor is supposed to protect. Whether dropped from the sky or fired from a cannon, the principle behind these weapons is the same: hitting the enemy with something very hard and very dense, moving very fast. Well, you know, what is that one of them talks you have with your boy when he's being picked on by a bully? You know, if you have to hit somebody, hit them hard and hit them fast, right? Don't give them a time to react. Well, same concept. And the kinetic energy projectile may become a staple of modern warfare sooner than you might think. In 2013, the U.S. Air Force 846th Test Squadron and civilian researchers at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory successfully test-fired a kinetic energy projectile, a tungsten-rich shell moving at 3,500 feet per second, more than 3 times faster than the speed of sound, on a specialized track at Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico. More recently, the Pentagon has tested the Navy electromagnetic railguns, hypervelocity projectiles, with the help of conventional U.S. Army howitzers. The Army hopes the completed cannon will be able to launch shells at up to 4,500 miles per hour, six times the speed of sound. Explosives may be dazzling in their destructiveness, but there's an elegant, almost Newtonian lethality to the kinetic energy projectile. And folks, wouldn't you say the same thing as you review the Tianjin China explosion and the Beirut Lebanon explosion? That there's almost a Newtonian lethality to these kinetic energy projectiles. Explains Matt Weingard, a weapons program development manager at Lawrence Livermore. Quote, the classic way of delivering hurt against a target has been to pack a lot of chemical explosive into a container of some kind, a barrel or a cannonball or steel bomb, Weingart told Task and Purpose in a phone interview. The violence comes from the chemical explosive inside the bomb sending off a blast wave, followed by the fragments of the bomb case, you know, shrapnel. But the difference with kinetic energy projectiles is that the warhead arrives at the target moving very, very fast. The energy is there to propel those fragments without the use of a chemical explosive to accelerate them. The more mass, the more violence. The concept of the hypersonic impact that defined Project Thor and its devastating potential hasn't been lost on defense officials. Military researchers are continuing to explore battlefield applications that take advantage of high terminal speeds to deliver much more energy onto a target than the chemical explosives they carry would deliver alone. As Army Major General William Hicks put it at the Booz Allen Hamilton Direct Energy Summit in March, quote, I think of it as a big shotgun shell, Hicks told the assembled crowd. Not much can survive it if you're in a main battle tank. If you're a crew member, you might survive, but the vehicle will be non-commissioned or non-mission capable, you know, knocked out of commission. And everything below the level of protection will be dead. That's what I am talking about. They've got an image here. Two images, actually. Says here, photo via Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. Says an arena test at the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory Site 300 used an aero shell fashioned from commercial carbon composite panels, right? This experiment validated warhead performance prior to the SLED test. The KEP isn't just appealing because of its elegance and relative cost effectiveness. A super dense tungsten warhead is relatively cheaper than conventional explosive munitions, but for its theoretical precision, the hypersonic shell is designed to defeat enemy armor and completely obliterate structures and equipment with extreme precision. Whether it's fired from ground artillery or deployed from an aerial or orbital platform, as Weingart explains, Hicks's vision is one of raining down violence across a large area without ostensibly risking military personnel and hardware. And the KEP's upside isn't just precision in targeting, but precision in the level of violence that the weapon actually deals out. Because the shell's yield is essentially a function of velocity and density rather than explosive payload, confining the impact's devastating effects to a specific area is simply a matter of physics. In theory, the KEP is basic physics, Weingart says, but the implementation is really, really hard physics. Using our high computing capabilities, we can exercise a high degree of control over those effects, says Weingart, We've got the most extraordinary computing power in the world, and we can take exquisite knowledge of physics and put it into a very sophisticated computer codes and run vast number problems to predict how things are going to behave in terms of speed and energy. The KEP could offer a middle ground between the controversial precision GPS-guided munitions deployed by aircraft and high-yield non-nuclear explosives like the GBU-43B, massive ordnance air blast, MOAB, or other mother of all bombs against ISIS militants in Afghanistan in April. By adjusting the density of the KEP, military personnel could choose between defeating the armor on a single main battle tank and delivering violence wholesale and simultaneously across broad swaths of an operational area without worrying about fallout. On the battlefield, you could do a straightforward calculation about whether the speed or amount of explosives are the most effective part of the warhead, says Weingart. Instead of putting explosives in, you just put in mass and heavy metals, regards of delivery system of set of terminal conditions. General Hicks referred to it as a shotgun, he added. He added, you can have a narrow or broad choke and spotlight a very small area with these effects if you're trying to pinpoint a well-localized target without damaging the surrounding area. I got to take a drink here. Hang tight. Much better. So the Office of Naval Research, ONR, sponsored electromagnetic railgun, EMRG, at terminal range located at Naval Surface Warfare Center, Dahlgren Division, NSWCDD. The EMRG launcher is a long-range weapon that fires projectiles using electricity instead of chemical propellants. Very possibly what people were seeing starting these fires there in certain areas of the world, Australia, the West Coast. But what's the main purpose of these kinetic energy projectiles other than raining down violence with the shock and awe that only weapons like the mother of all bombs can inspire? For Pentagon planners, it could be to counter Russia's tactical nuclear stockpile, according to Hicks. Warheads that could appear on future battlefields alongside conventional weapons thanks to ongoing miniaturization efforts, according to the DOD's Russia New Generation Warfare Study. Central to the weapons systems, tactical appeal isn't its delivery mechanism, but the KEP warhead itself. While Weingart's focuses on the KEP warhead rather than the firing system or combat context it might deploy in, he agrees with the potential application envisioned by Hicks. He is talking about the return of widespread violence to the battlefield. In fact, we've seen the Russians do that in recent years by bombarding areas like Syria and Ukraine, the likes of which we haven't really seen since the Korean War. The applications of the KEP are mainly theoretical for now. Sure. Now, they're up there, and that's what they've hit Tianjin with. That's what they hit Beirut with. And I'm going to tell you what, they're going to hit other places with it, and they're going to blame something else on it. Something completely else, and it's going to. And they're going to say it came completely and totally out of left field. We're going to get to that here in due time. We've got, what, oh, a little bit under 40 minutes left of the broadcast. This is here, and we're certainly decades away from a floating Thor's hammer circling the planet. Bullshit. But if kinetic energy projectiles do find efficient applications in warfare, it's possible they could find new delivery systems for battlefield destruction, with potentially devastating effects that might eclipse the MOAB as the most violent non-nuclear weapon in the Pentagon's arsenal. So we've gone from saying, oh, well, they don't exist. That's a bunch of, BS. to coming full circle saying, well, guess what? Yes, they do exist. The Pentagon's very excited about it. Generals are just loving the idea. And, you know, I've said it before, you know, and I'll say it again. It all comes from the slaying of Cain, of Abel, Cain slaying Abel with a rock, right? All we've done is taken that rock, picked it up, figured out that if it, you know, pack a little bit of something behind it, you know, refine it, make it fly a little faster, that rock's actually pretty damn deadly. You know, from the rock of Cain and Abel to the modern day projectile fired from the modern day rifle to kinetic bombardment systems placed in space. You know, and this gets right back down to Space Force, right? It absolutely does. You know, so I had originally set out to do this broadcast this Saturday on some space rocks and things we've seen coming and going here very recently. And three other objects that I'm following and keeping my eyes on, and three dates. And I'll mention the dates right now. September 1st, September 22nd, and November 2nd. Now, I'm not saying that the space rocks are not going to strike Earth, okay? We've been damn lucky so far, and there have been some impacts here or there. Just like the one that struck there in Akure, Nigeria. You know, this thing left a 2,268 foot crater. Obliterated this road going into this village. Destroyed houses. I mean, much like the same damage that we saw in Beirut and in China. So it makes me think of Carol Rosen, you know, Carol Rosen or Rosen, it don't matter either way you pronounce it. I pronounce her name Rosen, who knew Wernher von Braun and had, I guess, was like a secretary that worked with him or for him or something to that effect. And Wernher von Braun would tell her, you know, the last card. You know, before the last card, there's going to be asteroid strikes. And then the last card is going to be the ET invasion. Well, here we see, and I've just brought to you tonight and proven beyond any reasonable doubt that they do have the technology. They've been working on it for a very damn long time. Think about the Reagan years and Star Wars. And, you know, as I said, Wernher von Braun, the father of NASA, the leader of the German space program or the weapons platforms programs, you know, the V2 rocket specifically, saying, you know, first it's going to be the asteroid strikes or the meteor strikes, and then it's going to be the ET invasion. Well, we've yet to see the ET invasion, but, you know, we know that they've got projects such as Blue Beam and projects such as Fire Sign. But it makes me wonder what all we're going to see. You know, we've seen these comets here in the last couple of months. You know, first there was Atlas, which Atlas is, you know, World Bearer. You know, Atlas is the World Bearer, the guy bearing the world on his back, holding the weight of the world on his back, Comet Atlas. And then we had Comet Swan. Well, what does that purport to show me? Well, possibility of a Swan event. And by goodness, did we have a Swan event, something completely out of left field, and they're still running with it to this day, and they're going to continue running with it because it pushes forward their vaccine agenda. It's this COVID-19. That was the Swan event. And NEO-wise, the comet that was visible to the naked eye, The other two broke up before they became visible. I mean, Swan glowed green a little bit. It could be picked up with a certain aperture of viewing device. But then we had Neowise that was, you know, visible to the naked eye in the pre-dawn hour, or the, you know, first half of the viewing was pre-dawn hours. And then the other half of the viewing was at dusk. But you have Neowise, which means new wisdom. Well, with the new wisdom, what are we seeing? What's going on? You know, we've come to realize that this world is not what it seems. We've come to realize that people are controlling things and moving forward with events of depopulation agendas. And we know that there's the Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, and all kinds of other things that fit into the mix, right? Well, that's right. And it's almost on a daily basis, I'm finding articles or things are coming across my radar that's saying, oh, we've had a near miss. Oops, another near miss. We didn't see this one until it just, you know, until it was right there. So I typed in asteroid near miss on a search engine. And what does it bring up here? Oh, asteroid 2020 ND passes Earth on July 24th. Why is it potentially hazardous? Experts say near-Earth asteroid due to come within 300 miles of Earth in November. Not a concern yet. Video claims asteroid impact coming in November, but experts weigh in. You know, these are just headlines. I'm just kind of giving you a take of what they've got out there when you type this in. Asteroid bombshell. Two Indian schoolgirls warn NASA after discovering near-Earth object. One day ago. Asteroid tracker. NASA captures incredible space rock video completing near-Earth approach. 2 days ago. Asteroid close approach. NASA gearing up as asteroid to pass closer than the moon. You know, I would imagine some of these are probably well within the same articles, but you know as well as I know over the past at least 5.5 to 6, if not more years, we have seen a uptick of these Apollo-sized asteroids just gracefully buzzing by. Well, could we get hit by one? Well, without a doubt, yes. You know, where will it impact? It's hard to tell. But what I was getting at with these space-based weapons platforms, such as Project Thor and the tungsten rods, or tungsten carbide rods, you know, they could strike a city and say, well, guess we didn't catch that asteroid, did we? You know, and meanwhile, you know, a city like, let's say, Los Angeles is completely obliterated. So, like I said, we've got three rocks coming. And their trajectory, from what I've seen, looks like they're going to hit. They're either going to make impact or they're going to create an airburst incident. You know, such as the Chelyabinsk meteor. Well, and you know, the Chelyabinsk meteor there in Chelyabinsk, Russia, was a super bolide that entered Earth's atmosphere over Russia on February 15th, 2013 at around 920 YEKT or 320 UTC. It was caused by an approximately 20-meter or 66-foot near-Earth asteroid with a speed of 19.16 or 0.15 kilometers per second. That averages out to 40,000 or 42,900 miles per hour. It quickly became a brilliant super bolide meteor over the southern Ural region. The light from the meteor was brighter than the sun, visible up to 100 kilometers or 62 miles away. It was observed over a wide area of the region and in the neighboring republics. Some eyewitnesses also felt intense heat from the fireball. Due to its high velocity and the shallow angle of atmospheric entry, the object exploded in an air burst over Chelyabinsk Oblast at a height of around 29.7 kilometers or 18.5 miles, 97,000 feet. The explosion generated a blight flash. Oh, what a Freudian slip, right? The explosion generated a bright flash, producing a hot cloud of dust and a gas that penetrated to 26 to 2 kilometers or 16.3 miles. And many surviving small fragmentary meteorites as well as large shockwave. The bulk of the object's energy was absorbed by the atmosphere with a total kinetic energy before atmospheric impact estimated from infrasound and seismic measurements to be equivalent to the blast yield of 400 to 500 kilotons of TNT. About 1.4 or 1.8 PJ, range 26 to 33 times as much energy as that released from the atomic bomb detonated at Hiroshima. The object was undetected before its atmospheric entry, in part because its radiant source direction was close to the sun. Its explosion created panic among local residents. About 1,500 people were injured seriously enough to seek medical treatment. All of the injuries were due to indirect effects rather than the meteor itself, mainly from broken glass from windows that were blown in when the shockwave arrived. Minutes after the bullseye's flash, some 7,200 buildings in six cities across the region were damaged by the explosion's shockwave, and authorities scrambled to help repair the structures in sub-freezing temperatures. With an estimated initial mass of about 12,000 to 13,000 tons, short tons, heavier than the Eiffel Tower, and measuring about 20 meters or 66 feet in diameter, it is the largest known natural object to have entered Earth's atmosphere since the 1908 Tunguska event, which destroyed a wide, remote, forested, and very sparsely populated area of Siberia. The Chelyabinsk meteor is also the only meteor confirmed to have resulted in many injuries. No deaths were reported. The earlier predicted the well-publicized close approach of a larger asteroid on the same day, a roughly 30-meter or 98-feet 367943 Duende, occurred about 16 hours later. The very different orbits of the two objects showed they were unrelated to each other. So that was Chelyabinsk, right? And, you know, relatively not a very big rock. Now, the sizes of the rocks that they're saying are most likely going to strike, let's get into them real quick. Now, before I do, I was, like I said, a lot of things, you know, putting these broadcasts together, they either... You know, I've really got to do a lot of heavy digging and research and reading to get a context to roll with to give you, you know, some really good meat and potatoes, right? To give you a good meal, give you a good full belly, right? And so there's other times where, I mean, this chef just literally, the shows make themselves or the broadcasts make themselves. You hate, you know, I hate that word show. Because this isn't a show. This is information. This is stuff that very well may help you out in the future. Maybe. Or it might give you an idea of, you know, instead of buying the official narrative to the story that they want to tell you, you need to think outside the box and say, instead of that city being knocked out and completely obliterated by an asteroid strike, maybe, just maybe that might have been the rods from God falling, you know, them tungsten weapons John Wayne was talking about, you know, that space-based weapon. Just might make you think out of the box a little bit. So Tuesday, Elul 12, 5780, You know, some of you out there will understand that. The majority of people out there won't understand it. But that is the Jewish calendar for September 1st, 2020. Now, I'd love to get into this and read more about this Elul 12, September 1st, 2020. But I'm going to go through some of this real quick here. I'm hoping quickly. So, okay, here we go. So, Elul observances. As the last month of the Jewish year, Elul is traditionally a time of introspection and stock-taking, a time to review one's deeds and spiritual progress over the past year and prepare for the upcoming Days of Awe of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, as the month of divine mercy and forgiveness. Says today in Jewish history, for Elul 1, it is the most opportune time for Teshuvah, coming closer to God. Chassidic master Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi likens the month of Elul to a time when the king is in the field, and in contrast to when he is in the royal plate or he is in the royal palace. Everyone who so desires is permitted to meet him, and he receives them all with a cheerful countenance and shows a smiling face to them all. So that's what it says in this statement for, you know, Elul 12. Well, why am I saying this? Why am I speaking of this right now? Well, I said a while ago, September 1st is when this first rock, and it's called 2011 ES4, is to either airburst or strike the earth or have a very damned close grazing miss. So Elul 12, 5780, the only reason I mention this is because, as I was saying, these broadcasts will put themselves together sometimes. As I was doing some research, I'd come across a Hebrewic scholar going over some Torah code or the Bible code, more properly known as, instead of the Torah code. Same difference, though, but they're using the Torah and the equal distance lettering skip to come up with the sequence of numbers for letters to give, you know, you get what I'm saying. You know what I'm talking about. So this guy was, there's a YouTube video out there. You can find it if you dig hard enough. It just kind of fell into my lap, though, for some reason, and I was doing all this research and stuff. Maybe give it AI guidance or synchronicity. And in the Torah code, it says Elul 12, 5780. These are all within the same lines and or the text of the Torah code. That there's asteroid Elul 12, 5780, September 1st in 2020. Now, I'm warning you, and I'm telling you, now get this, because if nothing happens September 1st, September 22nd and November 2nd, don't come running back and be saying, well, John Warren's or whatever, he's full of it, because nothing happened on them dates. Hey, look, like I said, they're getting us ready for something big. And if they can purportedly, you know, create an asteroid strike with a tungsten rod, and these events don't happen, or if they do happen, please think outside the box. And if they don't happen, well, then guess what? Maybe we diverted them. Maybe we might have just laid down a speed bump of some sort to keep them from enacting upon these operations of destruction. So are we getting the full truth? Are these real space rocks out there? Well, I mean, absolutely, there's real space rocks out there. Are there a lot of them coming close? Yeah, without a doubt. But are they going to use this to their advantage to move their agenda forward and scare the hell out of people by using these kinetic energy weapons? So 2011 ES4 is roughly 82 feet in diameter. It was discovered on March 2, 2011, when the asteroid was about 0.054 AU from the Earth, which is about 5 million miles, right? And it had a solar elongation of 159 degrees. It passed closest approach to Earth, get this, So if it passed its closest approach to Earth on March 13th, 2011, well, then that means here in 2020, it's going to pass even closer. The asteroid has a short observation arc of 4 days and has not been observed since March 2011. The asteroid is expected to pass within one lunar distance of Earth in early September of 2020. So what does it say here? Obviously, they're not going to come out and say, well, by God, yes, it's going to impact. So they're going to say completely the opposite because they don't want people freaking out. You know, so they've got 2020 here as a date, and they've got 2055. I'm looking here, September 2055. Well, they're saying even closer then, but, you know, this thing could be nudged. This thing could hit a key loop gravity hole or whatever it is it may be, and we could have it pulled into the Earth. Or there could be some forms of systems up there that they have harnessed, or they can harness a space rock and, you know, literally sling it at the Earth. Folks, I'm not saying anything is, you know, nothing is impossible at this point in time. So this one is being tracked by NASA, 2011 ES-4. Now, the next space rock, September 22nd, called 2018 SB-13. Well, it's also a near-Earth asteroid. It is an Apollo asteroid as well, same as the last one. And the interesting thing about this is this one's not being tracked by NASA, but it is being tracked by the European Space Agency. And they're saying that this one has an absolute non-zero chance of missing the Earth. It is going to impact. It's going to cause an airburst, or it's going to cause an impact scenario situation. So why in the name of God or Yah or whatever the creator's name may be, is NASA not following this? Do they know something that we don't know? Are they not wanting people to be aware of this one specific object? I wonder, because I've seen the trajectory of these. 2011 ES-4, that one comes in and literally kind of, you know, hits the Earth as it's, as the Earth, it comes in trailing behind the Earth and hits the Earth trailing. This one here, 2018 SB-13, the Earth actually interdicts it, and it hits the Earth. So it comes from the top side. If you get what I mean, if you're trying to paint the picture in your head, you know, there's the physics here. So for some reason, NASA is not tracking this object. And it is said that it is going to hit, for sure, 2018 SB-13. September 22nd. And like I said, if nothing happens, well, then so be it. But these are the dates that is being spoken of from the agencies, so to say. And the third rock is called 2018 VP1, November 2nd. 2018 VP1 is an Apollo near-Earth asteroid, roughly 2 meters or 7 feet in diameter. It's not too big, eh? But still, it could do some damage if it hit airburst or, you know, just over the right area. It has a 0.4% chance, 1 in 240. Pretty good numbers, eh? 1 in 240, that sounds pretty damn close to saying, hey, it's more than likely going to do something. Of impacting Earth on November 2nd, 2020. It was discovered on November 3rd, 2018, when the asteroid was about 0.003 astronomical units from Earth, which is 280,000 miles. It had a solar elongation of 165 degrees. The asteroid has a short 12.9-day observation arc and has not been detected since November of 2018. JPL Horizon 2, November 2020 nominal Earth approach is estimated to be roughly 0.0028 AU, or 260,000 miles. The line of variation, or LOV, allows the asteroid to impact Earth or pass as far away as 0.025 AU, which is 2,300,000 miles. However, it is not listed as a potentially hazardous asteroid due to its small size. So, I'm just saying, keep your eyes open. Be aware that these are three potential dates for an impact of either a space rock or be used as a date for an event to move an agenda forward or to derail an agenda, whatever that may be. You know, folks, we come to the very end of the broadcast here. We've got, about 5 minutes? You know, I want to thank you for tuning in and listening. You know, we are the number one listener-supported radio station on the globe. Yes, it's a globe. It's not flat. And it takes you folks to keep us on air, donating to the station. You know, and you have received this broadcast from freedomslips.com, revolution.radio. Both URLs take you to the same place, the same page. You've got a donate button. It can walk you through the process. We do have a chat log for the station. Go there and check that out. You know, usually quite a few folks in there. And if you, especially if you're like-minded as such as us, free-minded folks who think outside the box, feel more than free to go to the chat room. I'm going to pop in there right now, say hi to everybody. And, you know, like I said, keep us on air, donate the station. We're not, you know, supported by the conglomerates, right? We're not supported by the corporate machine, so to say. And that's why we are able to do the broadcasting that we're doing and give you the information that we give you, because we aren't censored. We aren't restricted, redacted. And hey man, I'm like I said, I do these broadcasts. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to, you know, blow smoke up your ass. I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm going to put it out there. If you don't like it, hey, then so be it. But the thing is I'm going to tell you regardless. Now, from there on, what you need to do is either you need to redistribute and re-disseminate the information for the best of your ability, or guess what? Our archives are free this, all the way up through this summer. This summer, the archives are free. You know, come to the station site, freedomslips.com, revolution.radio. Hello, everybody in the chat log. Yes, everybody's saying hi. Sincere, Pat Rabbit, I mean, everybody, comment, everybody saying hi and a good show. Thank you. You know, I try my best. I try to give you guys a good bone with some meat on it and, you know, hell, maybe even a whole ribeye steak and a beer. Hey, there you go. You know, so the archives are free for the rest of the summer. Go in there. We've got all the shows that are archived. And you can catch my broadcast. You know, this broadcast is called The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1, with me, your host, John Wayne. You know, so it is what it is, folks. We are where we are, and we're going where we're going, and we're going to get there or we're not going to get there. Hello, cat, dog, girl. Everybody's saying hi in the chat log. So, yeah, currently we have 45 folks in the chat log of the station. Let's see here, freedomslips.com, revolution.radio. I wanted to check TalkStream Live real quick to see where we're sitting at in the rankings there, just to kind of give them out over the open airwaves. So give me due time here. Let me pull it up. I do know that they reset their counters at the top of the hours. Loading circle. Come on, let's go. We're running out of time. If I can get to load, try not to give any more dead air than humanly possible here. So 5, 10, come on, 15, 20, 25, 26, 27, 28. So we're sitting 28th right now on the broadcast. like I said, at the top of the hour, they drop everything all the way down to the bottom of the page, and then you got to work your way back up. You know, that's like it's like being on Mount Everest, right? And your spikes in your boots give out. And you're going for your pickaxe, and you're sliding. By God, you've already slid 500 feet, and you're digging your pickaxe into the side of the mountain. You know, re-getting your feet back, and then you start climbing again. That's what it's like being on TalkStream Live, I've realized. So, yes, and I thank you all for listening, all of you out there. I mean, all over the world, listenership all over the world. I'm in contact with a lot of folks out there, you know. Great folks out there listening to this broadcast all over the place. You know, stay tuned. We've got more broadcasts and programming for you ahead. I'd like to take off on a kind of a different kind of note, but we're not going to be able to. I don't have enough time to find the music I'd like to play. I'd like to play Spock or Leonard Nimoy. Music to watch Space Girls by. You know, it's kind of a groovy elevator music kind of tune. If you ever get a chance, check it out, because I don't have the time to play it tonight. But this has been the Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1, with me, your host, John Wayne, and I am signing off for the night. God bless all of you. Y'all bless all of you. Keep your powder dry and your head on a swivel, because God only knows, come what may. So, peace out. I will catch you on the flip side next Saturday, same place, same time. As I said, this is John Wayne, sign off for the night. Good night and Godspeed.
Revolution.